Following the lunch counter sit-ins at Woolworths in Greensboro, North Carolina, by some black students early in 1960, that sort of sit-in movement spread to other southern cities. Knoxville, I believe, there was a Riches in Knoxville that was a sit-in, or an attempted sit-in, and of course Atlanta.
Dozens of southern cities experienced sit-ins, and the Atlanta student movement was one of the strongest. Atlanta student leaders and their counterpart in the late spring formed a new organization, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which situated its headquarters in Atlanta. It was not the only civil rights organization to have its headquarters in Atlanta, because earlier that very year, Martin Luther King had moved back to Atlanta, and the headquarters of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the SCLC, were also here. Now, the Atlanta movement, you know, continued in the fall when school resumed in the fall of 1960, and students wanted to get King to join them. And remember, King was of a somewhat different generation than the students. He was a father of four kids. He was 29 instead of 19. He was sort of midway between the students' generation and the generation of his father, with whom he was co-pastoring the Ebenezer Church. So at first he was reluctant, but on this day he did join them at Riches, and there were dozens and dozens of people arrested. And what happened after that, Mayor Hartsfield, William B. Hartsfield, very mindful of the city's image, was furiously trying to negotiate a truce and eventually pushes through a truce by the end of the week. Everybody is released, dozens of people who were arrested, with one exception. That exception is Martin Luther King. Why? King had come back to Atlanta, and earlier this in the year, 1960, he had been arrested by DeKalb County police while he was transporting the white author Lillian Smith to her cancer treatments in Emory University. And he still had his Alabama driver's tag, and he was arrested on this traffic offense of not having changed his traffic tag to Georgia. And in September, that trial had come up, and he had received a suspended sentence on the traffic violation. Now, after the arrest at Riches, DeKalb County Judge Oscar Mitchell revoked King's probation on the traffic offense, saying he had violated his probation by getting arrested again, and sentenced him to hard labor at the state penitentiary at Reidsville. King was brought to DeKalb County, where he spent one day in the DeKalb County jail, and then the next day was sent to Reidsville. So this is a big deal, and there's a lot of apprehension about what might happen to him in Reidsville. And there are lots of players from lots of different vantage points who try to get involved. One is an aide to candidate John F. Kennedy, the Democratic candidate in the presidential race, Harris Wofford, who eventually gets somebody to prevail on Senator Kennedy to place a brief sympathy call to Coretta Scott King. We're sorry that your husband's in jail. Another important phone call was from John F. Kennedy's campaign manager and brother, Robert Kennedy, who eventually placed a call to Judge Mitchell, and King was released in bail the next day. Now, the way that this story traditionally has been told has been one where Robert Kennedy was a hero and kind of got on the phone and convinced Judge Mitchell to free Martin Luther King. In fact, there's other things that were happening, and one of the most intriguing things is that there was behind-the-scenes calls between the Kennedy brothers and Governor Ernest Vandiver at that time. Ernest Vandiver was an outspoken segregationist. When King had come back into the state, he had decried his arrival in Georgia. But at the same time, Vandiver had already cut a deal that summer of 1960 with the Kennedys, saying he would support the national ticket enthusiastically in return for John F. Kennedy not bringing troops into Georgia over the school crisis, as Eisenhower had brought troops into Little Rock. So there was a relationship there. And it was actually Governor Vandiver who worked behind the scenes to get to Judge Mitchell to release Martin Luther King. So this famous call that Bobby Kennedy actually made to Judge Mitchell was expecting. Sealing the deal.
Interesting. And SNCC gets some credit for this, too, because their plan all along, my understanding was, yeah, let's get King involved, because if we do, then the sit-in will get national attention, and it will become a political issue in the presidential race.
Right. Remember, you had a razor-thin race between Richard Nixon, the Republican candidate, and John F. Kennedy, the Democratic candidate. And lots of people, certainly after the fact, claim credit for their involvement in all of this, and Thurgood Marshall famously said to Donald Hollowell, King's attorney, gee, Hollowell, everybody seems to have gotten Martin out except for his lawyer. And, so it's one of these events where, especially after the fact, because it was what had happened after the fact, the episode died down after King was released. And secretly and without permission of candidate Kennedy, some people in the Kennedy campaign issued pamphlets that they sent through, that they distributed to the black churches on the Sunday before the election.
The blue bomb, I think, is what they called it, right?
And it was called No Comment Nixon versus a Candidate with a Heart, Senator Kennedy. And there's without a doubt, in this very close race, the black vote was decisive in a number of states. It might well have ensured Kennedy's victory. There are a lot of other factors as well, but certainly the black vote was key. Something the Kennedy administration, frankly, was averse to point out because they didn't want to be wed to a civil rights agenda at that particular time.
And the black vote typically had gone Republican in the past.
That's right.
Because it's the party of Lincoln. So for them to turn around and vote for a Democrat.
Right. I mean, obviously, with the New Deal, the black vote had begun to shift to the Democratic Party, but this accelerated that shift. And interestingly enough, there was one city in the United States where the black vote still remained largely Republican in the 1960 election. That was Atlanta, Georgia, because there were very able Republican organizers in the black community here, John Calhoun being one of them. And despite all of this stuff, Atlanta was the one city in the country that had a black majority voting for Nixon in the 1960 race.
And as a footnote, despite the resolution of the Rich's sit-in with Martin Luther King Jr., sit-ins continued in Atlanta after that, didn't it?
Sit-ins continued into 1961. A truce was arrived at in 1961. Sit-ins resumed in 1963 as well before the Civil Rights Act. So this did not mark the end of sit-ins, on the contrary.
Cliff Kuhn, thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.